Okay, Boker Tov, everybody. It's 9:30. I think we can get started. I want to dedicate this morning shiur to my mother, Rachel Kelman, Ruth Kelman, Rachel Bat Chaim, whose 21st yahrzeit is tomorrow. It's a little bit hard to believe it's been 21 years. And should have Ilui Neshama. And her memory, it's my parents, my father's yahrzeit this next Shabbos. So that'll be next Friday this year. They passed away 10 years and 1 week apart. And it's anything I have, the merit that I have, any learning I have, is really starts with my parents and the encouragement and all the wonderful work they did for myself. I think my sister's online, my brother's in Israel. And just be merit to celebrate many happy occasions with each other. Okay, so we're got up to the second Perek, Perek Sheni, Mishnah Beit, a famous Mishnah, but hopefully there's a lot of insight, a lot of things that, you know, we sort of know on the surface quite well, but if we dig a little deeper, hopefully there's a lot of new interesting insights. Rabban Gamliel Shbeno Shel Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi Omer. So Rabban Gamliel, the son of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, so you see already the continuation of the names. Remember, the leaders of the Jewish people, the official leader, the Nasi, beginning with Hillel. Hillel is really the first Nasi, and his son is Rabban Gamliel, Hazakein, Rabban Gamliel the elder, and his son is Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, and his son is Rabban Gamliel the Yavne, and his son is Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, up in Usha, and his son is Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. He gets a special name, the editor of the Mishnah, and then his son already is again Rabban Gamliel, Rabban Gamliel ben Osho, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, and of course it's very interesting, I believe, this is the only time he's mentioned in the Mishnah. I think I mentioned in our first class that Pirkei Avot, as we all know, is very different. The other 62 tractates of the Talmud are pretty much legal. The Gemara has a lot of Agadata, but the Mishnah itself is 98% the legal code. There's the occasional story, the occasional sideline in the Mishnah, but very rare. Pirkei Avot, of course, is very different, and people specialize in certain areas. So many of the rabbis mentioned in Pirkei Avot are mentioned nowhere else in the Talmud. They were a specialist in Musar and Agada and ideas, philosophy. They weren't halakhic experts. So I believe there are 22, when I counted them, I believe there are 22 people mentioned in Pirkei Avot who are mentioned nowhere else, which is quite fascinating. Rabban Gamliel is really not mentioned anywhere, this Rabban Gamliel, because he lived after the Mishnah. This is must be a later day addition to the Mishnah, because if Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi is the editor, even Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi is rarely quoted in the Mishnah, because he's the editor himself. But this is his son. But even though he's very Rabban Gamliel, Benosh, Rabbi Yehuda, we don't hear from him anywhere else. This one Mishnah where he appears in the next two Mishnah, continuing, is a very famous idea, and one, of course, that's generated a lot of controversy, although there's no argument about it in the Mishnah. Everybody agrees. Yafet Talmud Torah im derech eretz. It's nice. That in itself is a very interesting word, yafeh. It's like a funny word, like it's in a mitzvah. What is it? It's very nice. Yafeh Talmud Torah im derech eretz. It's very good. It's very nice to have the study of Torah im derech eretz. We have to define derech eretz. Not so simple to define. Sheyigiyat shnehem mashgachat avon. Because the effort, yigiyah, the toil in both of them makes you forget. Mashgachat avon makes you forget sin. Okay, so let's discuss what that means before we get to the sort of the modern day applications. So the Bartanura, the classic commentary in the Mishnah, says, what's derech eretz? So he says, it's milacha oschara. So basically, it sounds like work. Milacha, milachas are work, or schara, business. So what's the difference? What do you mean milacha or schara? So it appears to me that he's really referring to two different types of livelihood, or two different types of pursuits outside of Torah. Milacha, we know, is creative work. We all know, it's a misnomer to say you can't work on Shabbat. You can work on Shabbat. You can run up the CN Tower with 50 pounds on your back. You can do whatever you want, as long as you don't create. So as long as you don't light a match, that's no work, but that's prohibited. It's not the work per se. It's creative work. And on Yontif, we're allowed to do some creative work. It's melechet avodah, the labor in the field. So milacha refers to creativity, human ingenuity, taking nature, transforming. Basically, the 39 milachot, what they have in common is a transformation of something in nature. You're moving the state from one state, the object from one state to another. Even carrying, which is sort of its own milacha, follows under that. You're moving it from one place to another. The other things, I'm helping it grow. I'm transporting food from inedible to edible, etc. So similacha is basically human creativity. The making of bread, the first 11 things. Schora is business. Schora is business. Open up a tailor shop, a blacksmith, whatever they had, you know, in the Middle Ages, and that's schora. The Gemara, it's very interesting. The Gemara has the obligation in Kiddushin. There's six things a parent has to teach a child. Really not so many, because the first two was luck of the draw, how you're born. If you're a male, you get a brit milah. And if you're the oldest male, you get you're not a Kohen or a Levi, you get a pidyon habein. So it's really, we're down to four. Within the first month of the kid, everybody, we're only down to four things that you have to teach. And one is Torah. You have to teach, then you have to marry off your children, and then you have to teach them a trade. This is, you know, so they can have a livelihood. And the Gemara has the famous Yesh Omrim, some say swimming, because it was swimming doesn't necessarily only mean swimming. It meant the people lived by the water, and it was very important to swim. It was for Pikuach Nefesh. That's what it means. You have to do things to protect your life. So the question is that a father has to teach his son a trade. So the Gemara has a debate. Does he have to teach him a trade, or he can teach him to go into business? In other words, a trade, a blacksmith, because that work is always needed. There's a pandemic, God forbid, or, you know, the essential services go on no matter what's happening in the world. Food production, their business is making more money now because there's more of a need. So in business, business has its ups and downs, whereas you're a farmer, it's sort of all the time. So that's sort of an interesting debate, whether you fulfill the obligation to give your kid a college education in liberal arts. It's very nice, very beautiful, but I don't know, it's maybe less job producing than a trade. So that's interesting. So I think that's what the Bartanu is referring to. Milacha oschara. Derech Eretz means to teach your children creative work, or not creative, all of us, creativity, intellectual endeavors, and schora, the practical models, how to get a job in the world. The Tosfot Yontif says, Derech Eretz is not talking about the work, and it's not talking about earning a living, it's talking about the ways of the world. Person has to know what's the etiquette in the world, have to get along with people. So he put it as Derech HaChaim, how do people interact with each other? How do we speak to each other? So Derech Eretz, sort of a little bit, I don't know, we call it in English manners, I don't know. Derech Eretz is the way, the ways of the land, the way you have to know how to operate in society normally. The Tiferet Yisrael, living in the middle of the 19th century, says it's Musar Va'anava. So Derech Eretz is now not making a living, and it's not so much getting along with people, it's your personal character. You can learn a lot of Torah, but unfortunately, even though Torah is supposed to make our character better, we know it doesn't always work. Sometimes people misuse Torah, and this is a famous comment of the Nesiv. I think last week, Adina Berkowitz, you know, spoke about it in our Parsha Shir, in Parsha Naso, Yivarechecha Hashem v'yishmerecha. God should bless us and guard us. He has to guard us from our blessings, because sometimes our blessings turn into a curse. And the example the Nitziv gives, the great Rosh Yeshiva in Valajan, living a little bit later than around the same time, Tiferet Yisrael, is that Torah scholars often become arrogant because they know a lot. They know more than other people. You know, who are you? Why should I listen to your opinion? I know Shas backwards and forwards. So Yivarechecha Hashem, we should be blessed to learn, but it has to protect us. And he says that's for those who are into learning, shouldn't become arrogant. Those who are into business, Yivarechecha Hashem, God should give us great wealth. But Yishmerecha, we know wealth can also make you arrogant. I have a lot of money, you know, who has the money makes the rules. So that's Yivarechecha Hashem, Yishmerecha there. So Derech Eretz is sort of this idea, Musar V'anava, you have to be humble. Last week's Parsha, the only character trait described to Moshe is to be humble. Musar to Derech Eretz, you have to live a life that your morals are very good. Okay, so those are three kind of different explanations where what Derech Eretz means. Practical work, and that divides into two areas, sort of creative work and earning livelihood, which of course are connected, the ways of the world, etiquette, getting along with people, derech eretz, not speaking the language, etc., or our character trait. Now we all know that that Shimshon Raphael Hirsch built his whole philosophical approach to this idea, Yafet Talmud Torah and Derech Eretz. I think I may mention last week after Dr. Lamb passed away, so I decided to do some of his readings. So I read I just read his book. He wrote 30 years ago, Torah Mada, where he goes through all the models of Torah Mada. And he discusses what's the difference between Torah Mada and Torah Derech Eretz. You can read the book. We're not going to go into that now, really. And he actually says there's sort of a debate how to understand Hirsch. But the way I understand it is, first of all, I don't know, maybe I'm being too exacting here, but Yafet Talmud Torah Im Derech Eretz. The word im. So it's just, I remember the Malbim in, we'll read this in a couple of weeks by Bilam and Balak. So it says, he can't go. How can Bilam go? God, he can't curse the Jewish people. So finally, but Derech Shadam Rotza Leilach Bo Malichim Oto. You really want to do something, God will let you do it. The path you want to choose, everybody chooses their own path. So God says to him, if these people are coming to get you, Kumlach itam, go with them. Okay, go with them. But you have to do exactly what I say. Fine. The next passage, Vayakam Bilam Baboker. Bilam gets up in the morning, im sarei Moab. He goes im sarei Moab. So the Malbim Rav Meir Leibish Ben Yechiel Michel. I think that's what it stands for. The Malbim was a Romanian. I think he lived most of his life in Romania. He died also in the late 19th century. I mentioned a few weeks ago why there was a flourishing of Torah commentary in the 19th century, reacting a little bit to biblical criticism, emancipation, modernity. So there became a wave of biblical commentary, the Malbim, and all of them linking the oral and the written law, because there was an attack on the oral law. So they wanted to show the oral law wasn't made up. It's hinted to in the text. So the Malbim is famous. One of the things he's famous for, he asks questions, gives answers, but the Malbim is famous for taking words that are similar and explaining what's the difference between these two words, Sasun and Simcha, any two, Af and Chema, whatever two words you can think of that have a similar meaning. Why did the Torah use one? So we explain what's the difference between Itam and Im. Why did the Torah, God told Bilam, Vayelach Itam, Kumlach Itam, and Bilam went Im. So he says, Itam means you go with them, but you're not part of them. You're separate from them. You're not equal with them. You're a separate entity. God said to Bilam, you can go with them, but you're not going to do what Balak wants. You're not going to do it. You're your own person. Go with them, but you can't curse them. Of course, why would Balak want him? Which is, of course, what happens. Im means to be with, to be as one, as that's the word to use. Shaveh, you're totally with them. I think at the, at a Sheva Brachas, we make the two brachot, Mismeh Chatan Vikala and Mismeh Chatan Imakala. So there's a difference. Ve is sort of each one is independent, the Chatan and the Kala independently. Imakala, the Chatan and Kala merge into one. So, but maybe I'm reading too much into this one word im, but I think the idea is the same idea, it's important. Yafet Talmud Torah im Derech Eretz, that Talmud Torah and Derech Eretz has to merge into one. It becomes like one. It's not, and this perhaps is the major difference between quote-unquote Torah Madam, Torah and Derech Eretz, say Yeshiva University, where I went to school, and my father went to school, and the Hirschian model. Shimshon Raphael Hirsch insisted that the science teacher be a Shomer Shabbos Jew, because in Shimshon Raphael Hirsch's worldview, science is part of Torah. It's not that you, at least some might argue, but it's not that you learn science so you can understand Torah. That perhaps was the view of the Vilna Gaon. You have to know science. The Vilna Gaon has a famous comment, whatever you're missing in science, you'll miss 100 times in Torah. But it's unclear whether he meant that science had independent value or science was important. You can't understand Kiddush HaChodesh, can't understand a lot of the Torah without understanding science. How much independent value, unclear. And Shimshon Raphael Hirsch saw the science it's not a method to understand Torah. It's part of Torah. It's God's creation. God created the mountains and the biology and chemistry. Mark Shapiro was talking last night. He wrote Dr. Lamb a letter based on what he wrote in his book. Dr. Lamb claimed that Mada is what he called textless Torah, Torah without a fixed text. So So therefore, you don't make a bracha on it. In other words, if you really believe physics is part of Torah, it's part of God's creation. So if I get up in the morning and I study physics and I don't, I can say a bracha. It's part of the Torah. It's part of God's creation. That's normally not the way it's assumed. The question is, why not? It's a little bit unclear. If you really think it is part of Torah, okay, we can say we make the bracha on both. But in Dr. Lam's view, and in the Yeshiva University view, in a sense, I don't know, Dr. Lam's presenting many views, but Yeshiva University sees Torah Umata really as two separate things. And one of the frustrations for the, you know, you can read the YU commentary, the paper, it's the same articles, you know, in every generation, every 5 years. The students complain, you know, the biology doesn't connect to the Talmud, and we don't compare the philosophy, you know, of Kant and to the Rambam. And in other words, there's not this merging of the two. You study Torah, you study Gemara till 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you go to college. Yes, college is important. It even has intrinsic value, but it's separate from Torah. It's not integrated with the Torah. That's really the yeshiva. It's a Lithuanian yeshiva with a college attached to it. And the two are important, but the twain shall never meet. In a certain sense. And that, therefore, in Yeshiva University, you can have non-Jews who teach, you have non-observant Jews who teach, who cares? You get the best teacher in biology. Who cares if they're religious, they're not religious, it doesn't matter. But in the Hirschian view, it mattered very much, because Shishron Father Hirsch would not hire in his school, which I know, that's a co-ed school in Frankfurt. He didn't really have a yeshiva. Hirsch was the great community builder, the Hamonam, the day school system. Azriel Hildesheimer was the builder of rabbis in Berlin, in Germany. Hirsch didn't focus on leadership. On rabbis, he focused on the average person, which in itself, I think, is a, in many ways, wonderful and unique thing. I don't have to tell you, the rabbinic world is sort of self-perpetuating. You know, it's the elite. The focus is always on the elite. Hirsch focused on the average person. You don't have to learn so much Gemara. Day school, co-ed day school in Frankfurt. But everybody who was in that school had to be an observant Jew. So that's just a fascinating thing. And that's perhaps Yafet Talmud Torah im Derech Eretz. Okay, enough said about that. Nobody argues, in other words, on this mission, Yafet Talmud Torah im Derech Eretz. Anyways, that's what the mission says. She yigiyat shnei ha-mashgech ha-ravon. Toil in both of them makes you forget sin. So the Bartanur basically says something very simple. You know what? It's hard. I remember J.J. Schechter, Rabbi J.J. Schechter told us the story that they asked the Rav, you know, the Rav was in Berlin, University of Berlin. He got a PhD in University of Berlin. That's pretty impressive to get a PhD in University of Berlin. Now, to get a PhD in University of Berlin, when you're like the world's top Talmudist, I've mentioned in the past the Dvar Avram, Rabbi Avram Kahana, now I forget his name. The Dvar Avram was killed in the Kovno ghetto, I believe. Was one of the Gedolim. His name slips my memory. Shapiro, I think. Dov Kahana Shapiro, if I'm not mistaken. So the Dvar Avram was the one who gave Rav Soloveitchik, you know, smicha in his 20s. The Rav was in his 20s. And the Dvar Avram wrote that if all the rabbis say A and Rabbi Soloveitchik says B, you do B. Because Rabbi Soloveitchik outweighs them all. Like we'll see, not today. You know, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, if Rabbi Lazar's on this side and all the rabbis on that side, Rabbi Lazar is so great, he outweighs them all. Okay, so that's what he said about Rabbi Soloveitchik. So story is, some people came to Rabbi Soloveitchik and said, Rabbi, I don't understand. How could you find time? How in the world do you find time to, you know, do all this and to study and get a PhD in philosophy and this wanted to do on Plato and the Rambam, and there was nobody in University of Berlin to oversee a PhD on Plato and the Rambam, so we switched to Hermann Cohen, Neo-Kantian philosophy, and Rav Soloveitchik said, on the time you waste talking about me, that's the time I study physics, you know, I study my general studies. In other words, you don't waste any time. If you knew how to use your time wisely, you have time for everything, and we know that a person who, it's very common. If you're only learning Torah, you know, so I show up at 9:30 in the morning. I'm not saying there are some people who are extremely diligent, obviously, but the Mishnah is talking for the average person. It isn't true. When you're only doing one thing, you have too much time. You have too much time to sin. So if you work, if you have to get a PhD like you did at the University of Berlin, and Hildesheimer's the Hildesheimer Seminary, Rabbi Ziel Hildesheimer, to become a rabbi in Germany, you had to get a PhD. That was the requirement. In YU, the requirement is only to get a BA. You don't have to get a PhD. But in Germany, the German rabbis all had PhDs. And to become a rabbi, you're very busy. You don't have any time to sin. That's how the Bartender is. Very simple. You don't have any time to sin. The more common explanation, and that will sort of ties into the next line, V'chol Torah she'enima melacha sofa b'teila v'gorer d'avon. Any Torah that doesn't have milacha, which interesting, they use the term here, milacha, created, creativity. Any Torah without milacha, sofa b'teila, in the end will become nullified. That Torah will become worthless, v'gorer d'avon, and causes a sin. What do I mean, that Torah without work causes sin? This is a very... very modern Orthodox, you know, Mishnah. So the simple reading is the simple pshat in the Gemara in Kiddushin, when we just spoke about the six things, a parent, a father more specifically, whatever, a parent has to teach a child. So the Gemara says, if you don't teach your child a trade, a job, a profession, you're teaching him how to steal. So the Gemara says, wait, teaching how to steal? What are you? They're not teaching him to steal. He says, yes, you are, because if a person can't make a living, he's going to cheat. You know, if you don't know where, if you don't have enough money, so you cheat on your taxes, white-collar crime, blue-collar crime, whatever. You do what you have to do. So if you can't make a living, so that's the simple explanation. Torah without milacha will cause sin, because Torah alone, you can't live. They didn't, the idea of kolel was... that they didn't know from. The kolel is forbidden, right? We meant the Rambam says you lose your share in olam haba. You go to kolel. Okay, I understand today. I'm not the, there may be very good reasons. We need it. How much? You can argue about that. But you're right. Things change. That's eight lasot l'shem efer tor techa. But in the time of the Gemara, the idea of learning in a kolel was unheard of. It was forbidden. You weren't allowed to get paid for learning Torah. And read what the Rambam writes, your hair will stand on edge. So if you didn't work, you didn't have what to, you what sin you had to steal. It's also very degrading. You have to beg, and it's very sad. I mentioned many times that in the yeshivas in the 19th village, and most of the people were wealthy. Most of the, it's a big myth that people were poor. People were wealthy. People were poor, couldn't afford to go to yeshiva. The people in the wealth, the family had enough money, they could send their son to yeshiva. Naomi Seidman in her class was mentioning how expensive Beis Yaakov was. Anyways, Kol Torah she'enima melacha sofa goreret avon. The other sin, okay, that's the simple level. You sin because you don't earn a living. That's a very sort of, I don't want to say a low level sin, but that's sort of a basic approach. There's other problems with the Mishnah, perhaps as the commentators explain, a Torah without melacha, a Torah without work, without, you know, really having to, you have to learn and work. You're detached from society. A person who sits and learning Torah, we know the ivory tower, have that same problem in university sometime. Torah is meant when Avraham Avinu prayed for stone, betocha ir. You need the rabbis in the midst of the city. That's it. It's why the tradition was, I'm sure as people know, one of the great changes after post-World War II, and not a positive one, is that the psak halacha, halachic authority, has shifted from the community rabbi to the Rosh Yeshiva. And never in history was a Rosh Yeshiva a posek. You were not the posek, the community, because the Rosh Yeshiva is living in an ivory tower. The community rabbi lives with the people, with the problems of the people. He understands the people. So he was always the posek. Now, it's true today, communal rabbis, maybe the level of learning is different. It's a different type of a society than, let's say, when the Nodi Behud is the rabbi in Prague. It's the Nodi Behud, you have to know the Yudas, your community. He was the community rabbi. He wasn't the Rosh Yeshiva. So, but anyway, so that's one of the major shifts. And the problem in that shift, of course, is that explains a lot, the shift to the right and Chumras, obviously, for good reason. If you're a Rosh Yeshiva and you're dealing with people who are learning Torah most of the day, of course they should be more strict. Those are the people who should be more strict. But when it goes on to the community, it's a little bit of an issue. So that's what Torah she'enima melacha. You have to have Torah. You have to have people who are part of society. Now, the famous debate, what I sort of, I didn't really explain that, you know, about Torah and melacha. So I'm sure many people know that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was of the opinion that you should learn all day, that work is a curse. that, in other words, he agrees that sometimes you have to work. If it's not going to work out, you don't have a living. But if osim ritzono shel makom, if you're doing the will of God, then your melacha naset al yidei acherim. Then the money will grow on trees. You'll get your work done from other people. Rabbi Shmuel, of course, disagrees and says, no, basafta deganecha, you have to gather it, your grain, and of course, you have to live a normal life. You have to work, and you learn at night. You learn on, you go on Shabbos, you come to Zoom, whatever. You learn when you can fit it in, but you have to fit it in. But you have to work for a living. And the Gemara makes the comment, of course, a well known comment. Harbi Asuki Rabbi Yishmael. A lot of people did the approach of Rabbi Yishmael. Well, Tabiyatam, it worked. Torah Mada, Torah Derech Eretz. They worked and they learned. It was beautiful. Harbi Asu Rabbi Yishmael Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. A lot of people did like Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, but lo al Tabiyatam. It didn't work. So commentary, as you mentioned before, harbe, a lot in kolot doesn't work. Ma'at does work. But what's very important to note, lo al tabiyatam, it didn't go for them. It didn't work for them. It didn't get to their hand when they did otor. So what does that mean? It doesn't just mean they didn't have a living and they were poor and they had to beg for money and it was degrading. And, you know, that's not what it means. It may also mean that, but it means their Torah wasn't good. There was lo al tabiyatam. Sometimes the Torah becomes corrupted is a strong word, but a person who has sort of, there's a misallocation, his system is sort of off kilter, so even his Torah learning isn't so good. And the truth of the matter, you see that. I mean, you see there the great Torah people, the Rambam, of course, and Rav Soloveitchik, all the people, they didn't know any less Torah. And Rav Lichtenstein, of course, listen, these are the models who I look up to. But, you know, they will tell you that it's not just that it's important to study literature or to study physics on its own. And it's not just important to get a job. It enhances our study of Torah. If you understand poetry, you understand Torah much better, right? The Netziv's beautiful, beautiful introduction that I've often quoted. The Torah describes itself as a shira. The last mitzvah in the Torah, kitu lachem et ha-shira hazot. Write for it down this song. And the rabbi, it's really referring to Hazinu. That's the pshat. It's right after Hazinu, which is written as a song. But the Gemara, Chazal interpret that verse to mean shira is referring to the entire Torah. And this is the 613th mitzvah is to write, every Jew should write a Sefer Torah, which today we fulfill by having a Jewish library. That's what Shulchan Aruch says, you know, when there was no Torah Shebaal Peh written down. So you needed to have a Torah. Today, we don't need a Torah. We have too many Torahs. Better give money to Jewish education than spend $50,000 on a new Torah. That's my view, but we have enough Torahs around. Most of them don't get used except on Simcha Torah. So the mitzvah today is to have a Jewish library. Art scroll, Koran, that's the mitzvah of today. But there, the Netziv explains, why is the Torah a shira? It gives a beautiful explanation what poetry is, the difference between poetry and prose. You have to read between the lines, right? It's boring. The first time you read a poem, you don't understand how a poem, where everybody hates poetry in high school, right? What's it talking about? Ridiculous. This is what it really means. And you're telling me this is what they had in mind. So, but the more you study it, you see the beauty. And you know that what's more important than the words in the poem is between the lines and the allusions, and poetry stands as test of time and multiple interpretations. And a poem will, he has to rhyme. He has to have a sonnet. He has to have 14 lines. He has to have his initials. So you have to play around with all the words to get these extra ideas across. That's exactly what Torah is. No, if you don't know how poetry works, you can't understand how the Torah works. It's true in everything. So our Torah is enhanced by literature. That's what I was saying before. So Torah, even it's not that you'll just sin, it's the Torah itself will be no good. That's not saying you won't have food. Okay, yes, the Torah will be lost. Okay, let's move on a little bit. I want to finish a few other ideas. This perhaps what I said now is a little bit more famous. Kol ameli mim hatzibur. Whoever a male works means work hard. Im bechukotai teilechu. Right. So Rashi says at the end of Vayikra, im bechukotai teilechu. What does that pasuk mean? What does it come to teach to you? Amelim b'tor. You have to work hard. It's another problem we have. Nobody today likes to work hard. We live in a relaxed. In many ways, it's wonderful. Everything's relaxed. We have so many conveniences. But it impacts on our Torah. You have to sweat the Torah. You have to work hard. You have to have problems. You have to, it's hard. It's really hard work. You can't just sit in bed. I mean, it's not. I'm not against that, of course. But to really become a Torah scholar, it's not going to work reading a few books in English. You can't read the Talmud with whatever. You have to read the Talmud in the original. You have to know how to break your head on a Rashi and thought, okay, you can use arch oil and corn to help you. But at a certain point, you have to work hard and break your head and contradictions and figure out, you a mailing. So a mail makes to work hard. Communal work is really hard. It's frustrating, and you have idiots who drive you crazy, and people criticize you. You put your heart and soul into something, and all people do is complain, right? Not always, but we know that's part of it. It's a meilim imetzibur. Who's ever a meilim to you a meilim em l'shem shmai. So this is a really important idea, which again, maybe, well, like I always say, these ideas are, I think many of them are well-known. They're all well-known, but they have to be said. You should work l'shem shemayim. You should work for the sake of heaven. Okay, very nice. You should work for the sake of heaven, but it's much more than work for the sake of heaven. In other words, you shouldn't go community service. Listen, I remember when I was working in St. Catherine, and I'm not even saying there's anything wrong with this particular aspect. If, you know, if there's other things to it, I'm not saying this is why it was done, but I remember when I was working as an accountant. So when my first job here in Toronto, I remember one of the partners told me he was on the board of Mount Sinai Hospital in Toronto. And he said that being on the board, I don't remember the context of our conversation. He just mentioned to me that was tremendous for the business because he got lots of new clients. You know, he was involved in the hospital and his accountant, the senior partner. So he got a lot of business. I'm not saying you have to turn down business because you're working with Tzarchei Tzibur, but that's not the reason to work with Tzarchei Tzibur. You have to do it not for the benefit that accrues to you. You have to do it because it's the right thing to do. But there's something much, much deeper than that. There's a famous contradiction between doing mitzvot shelo lishma. Should a person do mitzvot for ulterior motives, the wrong reason? Again, and other, we've discussed this in other contexts. I don't know in the Pirkei Avot here, but other times. So the more famous expression is lo lam yasak adam b'torah mitzvot shelo lishma. A person should always be involved in Torah mitzvah for the wrong reason. Who cares? Who cares why? I'm giving staka to get my name on the building. Who cares? That's great. I'm giving staka. Who cares? I'm doing it for all kinds of personal reasons. You're doing the right thing. Shemitosh shelo lishma balishma. Because even if you do it for the wrong reason, we know we're impacted by what we do. We'll do it shelo lishma. And that contradicts, there's a second statement that a person who works shelo lishma, noach lo shelo nivra, would have been better had he been not being created. That's quite a contradiction. He should not have been born. Whoa. So Tosfot, Rashi and Tosfot explains it depends what there's shelo lishma and shelo lishma. Shelo lishma, to get business, to make money, to get honor. Okay, not great, but fine. That's all right. But shelo lishma, to become a critic, that's terrible. I want to study the Torah so I can show that Torah is false. I have to know a little bit. I want to criticize the rabbis of the Talmud, so I have to know what they said a little bit. So I study to criticize, so that's better not to be born. But there's another thing, and I did mention this not so long ago, but okay, I apologize for those who've heard it, people who work with Tzarchei Tzibur have more important, they have to do lishma, because when you work for the community, you have to hurt people by definition. You have to hurt people. Community leader has to make a decision, and you can't benefit everybody. More money for here, less for there. That's what it means. It's not easy. That's why we want pious people, pious, religious, deep characters, people with commitment for others and empathy, because it's very hard. You're going to have to hurt people as a leader. No, if you hurt people, lishma, for the sake of heaven, you do what you think is right, that's okay. But if you're hurting people, because, you know, I'm making a calculation, how am I going to get reelected? You know, should I hold a campaign thing indoors or outdoors? I apologize for my intrusion into American politics, right? Should I hold a 20,000 rally indoors or outdoors? Well, what's better for the people? Well, what will help me get reelected? So that's terrible. That's terrible. When you do things to hurt people, not for l'shem shemayim, you can disagree with me if you want. Not l'shem shemayim, so then that's a terrible thing. But people osek b'tzarchei tzibur have to be very, that's why the Mishnah puts the emphasis. Kol ha'meilim mimat tzibur, yu ha'meilim l'shem shemayim. Sheshchut avotam mesayetam. The merit of their fathers are helping. This is very cryptic, very unclear what this means. The righteousness stands forever. So I think the simple meaning is that don't Zchut avotam misaitam. You know, like I mentioned beginning here, who am I? I'm because of who my parents are. If my parents didn't, and I wasn't an easy kid to bring up, those who know me as when I was younger, I wasn't the easiest kid around. And so the merit that you have is really from the parents, from the people who came before you. You stand on their shoulders. Zchut avotam misaitam. You think you're such a big knucker for all you do. Don't be so arrogant. Look at Derech Eretz, be humble, Musar, right? We're still in the same Mishnah, you know, with Derech Eretz. Give credit to other people. Or like I always say, you know, so much of our success is luck. That's the whole notion of tzedakah and making a bracha. For every successful person, there's somebody just as bright and smart who worked just as hard. It wasn't a successful luck. We call luck God. Kadosh Baruch Hu decides ultimately in the end. So we should give merit. Don't take all the credit for ourselves. But I once heard a beautiful explanation. Batem. And you, I'll give you reward like you did it. In other words, what does that mean? So I heard a beautiful explanation. In other words, look, work l'shem shemaim. Remember, it's not all you. It's your, you know, the people who came before you. Avotam could mean your personal parents, or in the context of the Mishnah, zchut avot, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, perhaps. And I'll give you reward as if you did it. So I remember hearing from Dr. Abraham Twersky many years ago that... he said, what's the connection? He was referring Avotah, meaning the Avot, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and it's as if you did it. He said, well, if you look at the Avot, they were actually pretty unsuccessful. Avram had 8 kids. You know, we think of Yitzchak and Yishmael, but he had married later in life, Keturah, had 6 kids. What happened to those kids? Not Jewish. 1 out of 8 kids, some of them caused us great problems later on. Midian, he had problems with some of the children, descendants. We had lots of problems with descendants of Yishmael. So Avram wasn't such an ayayay success story. He batted, I'd say, 125, and even in baseball, where you become a multimillionaire, if you're strike, you know, if you're out 70% of the time, 125, you're not going to make it into the majors. That's it, you're out. And Yitzchak, all right, a little better, 50%. 50%, not so great with your children. To succeed 50%. But you know what? That's life. And the Torah wanted to teach us, the greatest people in the world. Moshe had 0% success, and his kids amounted to nothing. As a matter of fact, there's an allusion in Shoftim, Moshe's grandchildren were involved in Avodah Zarah. They weren't so, even Aaron's kids, maybe none of you were righteous, but they did something wrong. They were died. So many, and we know, go through history, how many great leaders, how many great people had children, quote unquote, off the derech, whatever terminology you want to use. So the Mishnah says, you work hard. You know what? You can't always succeed. And sometimes you'll have great failures, but that's okay. I mean, not okay, but remember, you're no worse than Avram Avinu. And so you'll get great reward for the success you had. New Avram Avinu, we consider him a great success, the founder of the Jewish people. We're here because of Avram Avinu. Chesed, beautiful. Avram, amazing. Elohei Avraham, amazing. So, you know, failure and success go together. We have both of them. So you have to work hard. And of course, people who work in the community, that's why it's said in this context, so many community initiatives don't come to fruition. So, you still should work at it. Don't think you're a failure. Sometimes it will work out. Sometimes you won't even know till 50 years after you're dead. We all know that people do work now, and sometimes the results is many years later. So yeah, you do your work l'shem shemaim. You got to do what's right. The result, that's up to God. You can't determine the result. You act l'shem shemaim. The zchut avot, maybe the merit of our ancestors will come and help and maybe turn into fruition one day, even if it's only a small part that will be turned into fruition. So that's what the Mishnah says here. Okay. The other point they ask, of course, point out is that when a person is involved in the community, let's say we talked about Yafet Talmud Torim, Derech Eretz, you know, you're involved in the community, you can't learn. One of the, I don't want to call it a tragedy, that's not the word, but one of to be a rabbi means you can't learn so much anymore. I think I once mentioned, I don't want to mention his name, although he said it in public, a rabbi said recently, you know, not recently, I heard a rabbi once say that the day he became a rabbi is the day he stopped you stop davening. I mean, how can you daven and shul? You go to eight minyanim, you speak at four minyanim every Shabbat, and the people can tell people to be quiet and this and that. You can't daven. Yeah, how can the rabbi daven? It's okay, that's the job of a rabbi. He has to give up his davening. The Gemara says, Rabbi Akiva, when Rabbi Akiva would daven with the tzibur, he daven with the tzibur, he'd finish. When he davened at home alone, oh boy, he'd start in one corner, he'd have another corner. We'd done with such kavani, it was so intense. And the shul, you can't do that. You can't keep the balabatim waiting for an hour for Shmoneh Esrei. It's a whole different type of a community. So when you are involved in the community, you're not going to be able to learn Torah. A rabbi can't learn so much Torah that he's not supposed to, right? That's the famous comment I've often quoted Rav Chaim. I usually just quote the other part of Rav Chaim, that they ask, what's the job of a rabbi? So the Aruch HaShulchan says, the Paskin Shaila is to learn Torah. What else does a rabbi do? And Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, the great learner of Torah, the great Rosh Yeshiva in Balazhin, the founder of many ways, the whole Brisker Derech, he says, the job of the rabbi is to help the poor, the widow, and the orphan. The job of the rabbi is to close the Gemara, not to open the Gemara. The job of the Rosh Yeshiva is to open the Gemara. The job of the rabbi is to close the Gemara. Can't learn. How can you learn? You have to problems. This couple's having a problem. This person's having a problem. So that's the Mishnah says, "Male ani alechem schar harbe kilu asitim." Even if you don't do, when you're involved in the community and you can't do other things, that's okay. Don't worry. That's your job. You'll get the same reward. You get greater reward for doing what you did, even if you didn't do it, because we can't do everything. Okay, Mishnah Gimel. Have Zaharim Birushut. Let's pick up the speed a little bit because I want to get to Mishnah Dalet. Be very careful with Rishut. With Rishut means those who give you permission. Be careful with Rishut. What does that mean? Those are politicians, the one who make decisions. And it's talking, the Feret Yisrael says, it's talking to the leaders. We just talked, you're involved in the community. So people involved in the community have to go to political dinners and meet with the politicians. And this, okay, it's very nice and it's very important, but be careful. Don't get carried away. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. No, we all know, but the Mishnah tells us that politicians are not so l'shem shemayim, even though they're supposed to be. Eimekarvim lo ladam ala l'tzorach atzmam. They're close to you. They're friendly when it's good for re-election. Politicians, they're always available. Eimekarvim nirim ko'avim. They appear as if they love you. Bishat hanatam, when it's good for them. Ve'enom nimlo bishat adam bishat tacho. But when the chips are down and you need them and they don't gain anything, it's a very, very cynical Mishnah. What could I say? It's again, not always true, but it's very much true. And that's what the Mishnah is saying. And the connection that the Feret Yisrael explained is this community. Community leaders have to deal with politicians. That's it. We have all the lobby, the OU, the Aguda, everybody have to lobby Washington. Very important. And you have to lie a little bit and you have to TL people. That's what it means to be Osek B'Tzarchei Tzibur for the community level when dealing with people in authority, the Rishut. Right? So, but you have to be careful how you do it. Okay, that's easy. Well, Mishadal, Hu Ayal Mer, we're continuing Rabban Gamliel, the son of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. Asei Ritzono Kirtzoncha, make your will the will of God. Kadeshi Asei Ritzoncha Kirtzono. You do what God wants, God might do what you want. But tell Ritzoncha, nullify the wrong you want to do mifnei ritzono for what God wants. Kedei shivatel ritzon acharim mifnei ritzoncha. So God will cause you others not to harm you. Okay, I don't know quid pro quo, but you should do. Sometimes doing mitzvot is very enjoyable. We discussed before the beautiful introduction of the Ek Leital. We should love doing mitzvot. To love and get joy out of mitzvot does not take away lishma. Not doing something shalom lishma doesn't mean I enjoy it. It means I'm doing it for an ulterior motive. I'm doing it to make money or whatever, to get honor. But do it because I love it, because I love learning. That's great. That's the highest level of lishma. So he said, we do mitzvot. Asei ritzono kirtzoncha. So that's how the Feret Yisrael explained. Do the same way when you're out in business, you're always looking for new deals. You're so excited, new things you really want to do. That's how we should do when it comes to Torah. But often we don't like doing Torah. Often, Torah is inconvenient, is a burden. And, given a choice, right? And we've discussed that in the Rambam a little bit, right? The Rambam, certain mitzvot, I really wish I didn't. We don't have that, but I really wish I didn't have to keep kosher. Why can't I eat pork? I'd love to eat pork. But what can you do? So that's really what the Mishnah is saying. But okay, I want to discuss a little bit more the last part of the Mishnah, the more famous part of the Mishnah. Hillel Omer, it's very interesting. It's in the middle of the Mishnah. And I've always wondered, why in the world is it where we've now gone back literally seven generations. Remember, Rabban Gamliel, the son of Rav Yehuda HaNasi, going back, Rav Shimon Gamliel, Rabban Gamliel, going back, Hillel, and there's no new Mishnah. It's part of Mishnah Dala. Hillel Omer, Alti Frosh Min Hatzibur. Because when I was preparing this last night, it sort of hit me. So I realized what none of the Farshim directly that I saw deal with this question. But based on how they explain it, it sort of becomes obvious. This is really a continuation of the importance. I mean, it's sort of obvious now, I guess, when you read it. Alti Frosh Min Hatzibur. Do not separate yourself from the community, which is exactly what we just learned. Kol ha-meilim v'matzibur, yom-meilim l'shem shemayim. Anyways, continue to say Mishnah, Hillel Omer, al tifrosh min hatzibur. Do not separate from the community. So I'll make a few points, I hope. So we know, the Rambam writes in Hilchot Tshuva that one of the 24 people, I believe, who lose their share in the world to come is someone who's poresh mitarchei tzibur. It's amazing. Someone who separates himself from the community loses their share in the world to come. We're not individual Jews. We don't live in an island. That's what we've been talking about the whole year. We involve l'shem shemayim, shelo l'shem shemayim. Okay, yeah. We're part of Eitzibur. Rav Soloveitchik and Ala Tshuva develops this theme. You can be the most pious Jew in the world, but if you're not part of the Tzibur, that's it. You're out. Where the Rambam got this from, because the Gemara is doesn't say anything like that, as far as I know. Where the Rambam gets at that, probably, or maybe the Haggadah Shel Pesach. Rasha Mahu Omer Mavo Dotzot Lachem. Whatever its question is, the way that, what's this service to you, which on the surface doesn't sound so terrible, but the way the Haggadah interprets, Lachem Velo Lo, for you and not for me, Ilu Ayashem Lo Yanigal. He would have been in Egypt. He wouldn't have left. So in other words, the Haggadah defines a Rasha as a Poresh Midarchi Tzibur. That's the simple meaning of the Haggadah. So Alti Poresh Min Hatzibur, that's like, you know, we're part of a community, and we discussed, I think last week mentioned, the point of davening with the minyan is not to say Kaddish and Kedusha. That's a very low level reason we daven with the minyan. The reason we daven with the minyan when we can, and when we can't, we're not allowed to. When the reason we daven with the minyan is because we believe that the relationship between God and the individual and God and the tzibur is totally different. I mentioned this last week. And therefore, a tzibur is a totally different experience. And God hears the tefillot of the tzibur much more. But okay, so all tzibur means tzibur. So I just want to mention quickly the Tiferet Yisrael. You notice I like his commentary a lot. Says there are five ideas contained in this phrase, all tzibur means tzibur. Five points to this. Number one, to follow the minhagim of a tzibur. When you're part of a community, and this is very true, people think minhagim are important. Minhagim are important as famous Rabbeinu Tam, that minhag's backwards spelt. If anybody wants to say, I'll let them say to see if and who's still listening. Minhag spelt backwards is Gehenim. You want to go to Gehenim, fight about minhagim. Oh, people fight about minhagim like anything. Divrei Torah, who cares what God says? We don't fight so much. Whether to say Vayihi Noam on Saturday night, or whether to say Hala with the people go crazy. The most Narishkeit things we fight about. Minhagim, not God forbid that they're Narishkeit, but they're the least important thing. Minhagim, by definition, a minhag is the least important. Not a Torah law, it's not a rabbinic law, it's a minhag. Okay, very nice, beautiful, but because minhag comes from the people, because we developed it, it's not what God told us. What God told us, okay, I do, whatever. But a minhag, that's what my father did, that's what our community in Poland did, I'm going to fight to the death for that. That's terrible. So that's what Rabbeinu Tam says, minhag spelled backwards is Gehenim. It's a very important thing to keep in mind. Minhag can end you up in Gehenim. Anyways, so there is the Rambam holds, there's no such thing as a personal minhag. That it doesn't exist. It's a convenience. I don't know if I mentioned before, I'm sure, right? Not everything you do is a minhag. You know, all the old jokes, you know, they make fish and they cut off the head because the pot wasn't big enough. It's not a minhag to cut off the head. Or the other famous story J.J. Schechter told us once, and very, very, very cute. You know, Hasidic Rebbe went to light the Hanukkah candles. So when he got to light the Hanukkah candles, there was like a broom there or something in his way. So he took the broom up and he moved it away. And he turned to his students and he said, because you know he's the Rebbe, they're going to follow him. Says, no, no, this is not part of the Hanukkah lighting, moving the broom. So the next year, all the students, all this, what are they called? The Chassidim, they go to light the Hanukkah candles, they put a broom, they take the broom, and they say, this is not part of the Hanukkah candles, and they light, right? Not everything we do, I guess I told the joke not well, but not everything we do is a minhag. It's a convenience. Making early Shabbos in the summer, that's the Rav Moshe's famous tshuva, is not a minhag. It would be a minhag if you did it in the winter. If you love Shabbos so much that you bring in Shabbos an hour early, 52 weeks a year, then that's a minhag. But if you bring it in the summer, it's not a minhag. It's convenient. I don't want to eat supper at 10 o'clock at night, so I go to shul at 7 o'clock at night. It's not a minhag. Because in the summer, I'm happy to bring in Shabbos. I'd like to bring it in later. So there is no such thing as, not everything is a minhag. Just because you did it doesn't make it a minhag. So the Rambam goes so far as to say, even a religious idea is not a minhag if it's personal. Minhagim only count of the tzibur. You sometimes get this. A chazan gets up. I'll tell you where it irks me sometimes. You go to a shul, you know, so some shuls, they say Baruch Hashem L'Olam Amen V'Amen, and some don't. Or V'Shamru, you know, the people of the Vilna Gaon don't say V'Shamru. So they go to a shul, and the shul, like, let's say, I daven Nosach Ashkenaz. So I have, but on my shul, daven's, you know, Nosach Sfarad. So on Friday night, Kegavna, they say Kegavna. No, that's not my minhag. But if I ever daven for the Amud, of course I say Kegavna. And when the Chazan gets up and you see this, they skip it. They just go Barku. It's wrong. You have to follow the minhag. And it's a silly example, but it indicates the point. You have to follow the minhag of Eitz Tzibur. Now, how this happens in America is very different because America is built on personal autonomy and everybody does their own thing. And that is reflected in the halakha. Probably most commonly, in other words, in Europe, this would not be done. It's a different mentality. So what's accepted? We accept communal minhagim where people do different things. That wasn't accepted in most shuls in Europe. Everybody had to do the same thing, right? You couldn't decide whether you sit or stand for Kriya Satorah. The whole shul was sat or the whole shul was stood. Can't do what you want like we do in America, North America, right? So that's the question. We have that every year on Chol HaMoed. You have people who put on tefillin, people who don't put on tefillin, come to the same shul. In Israel, they don't allow that. In Israel, they don't allow you to put on tefillin. The minhag in Israel, not put on tefillin. America, you know, you do what you want. Oh, it's usually the other, I'm surprised in Israel they have that minhag. Usually Israelis do what they want too. But anyway, so the first thing, Alti first mina tzibur, whatever the communal, you don't like the community minhag, go to another community. But as long as you're in the shul, or you have to follow the community. Number two, Alti first mina tzibur, it's sort of what we've been talking about. Get involved in the community. Don't let decision-making be made by others. Get in, kolo, Alti first mina tzibur, they're important decisions the community is making. Get involved. Okay, very nice, obvious. Number three, feel the pain of the community even if you are not. So we have a lot of this now going on, right? Certain people are suffering a lot. Other people, it's very hard to show empathy. Alti fresh min hatzibur. When people are suffering, you can't. That's what the Gemara says by Yosef, right? The Yosef had his children. The Pasuk says, I think, right before the fast happened. Right before the famine happened, because you're not allowed to have relations with one's wife when the world is in famine. How can you be doing that? That's not right. The whole world's in pain and you're doing whatever you want. So there is a notion that even if everything's good for you, right, you have to feel the pain of other people. Alti fresh min hatzibur, and that's true on fast days and all kinds of ideas. Alti fresh min hatzibur, he says to pray in the plural. We daven, we never daven for ourselves because that's the tzibur. And here is I find the most interesting of his explanations, the one that I probably wouldn't have thought. You know, the other ones we all understand more or less. But we also understand this. If you think about it, again, getting back that the whole theme here is leadership, right? Ameli mima tzibur, l'shem shemayim. Heavy zaring birushut, the people dealing with politicians. We're talking on leaders. So it says a leader has to never, what I mentioned before, that if you're learning in the kol all day, sometimes you're detached, you're living in the ivory tower. A leader should never be severed from the community. We know when you become a leader, you do. You there are certain, you know, you can't be with everybody. You're sort of, you know, dealing with your issues, right? The CEO, that's why I think in FedEx, right, everybody has to start off as a truck driver, if I'm not mistaken. You have to know the system. We don't want to bring in a guy on the manager level. Want to know, you have to, ultimate person means we have to know what everybody's doing. If I want to give a modern day example, I remember when I was in YU, when I was in Smicha, we had to do some Shimush, whatever, you know, to the practical rabbinic. So I remember I taught a class in Ramaz many years ago. And I remember in Ramaz, so they told us that one of the rules of the school is that every administrator has to teach at least one course. I don't know if they still have that in Ramaz. I think it's a beautiful idea. So Rabbi Lukstein, I think Rabbi Lukstein, Baruch Hashem, I think he's still well. He should be well for many years. I think he still gives a great 12 course. And it's very important. You're running a school, and we know very often, sometimes, you know, the administrators come from the classroom, sometimes they don't come from the classroom. But, you know, it's very nice to be an administrator, but if you're not in the classroom, you don't really know what's going on. So, and walking into a classroom for 20 minutes while somebody else is teaching ain't going to do it. So I think on an ultimate freshman, Tzibur is the leaders have to know where the people are standing. Okay, that's one. Okay, number two, Hillel says, "Al tamim batmechad yomatcha." Don't believe in yourself till the day you die. So the Gemara quotes the famous example: Yochanan Kohen Gadol, 80 years. It's a long time. 80 years was the Kohen Gadol, and at the end of his life, he became a tzduki. In other words, you should never be sure about yourself. But I think it means more. That's the example all the commentaries give. You know, people, you never know what's going to be. But I think what it means on a more basic level is don't believe in yourself, meaning always question what you do. Right. Unfortunately, in today's world, we take it as a sign of weakness when a politician or a leader changes their mind. You know, they say, you know, now I see things differently. You're right. When you become a leader, when you're an administrator, you see things differently than the teacher. When you're a partner in a firm, in the law firm, all of a sudden what the employees want is very right, the employee partnership. And no, you have to be able to see the other side. So don't believe in yourself. Always be willing to question your beliefs, and that's a sign of greatness to change your mind. We have many of the contradictions in the Rambam can be answered that way. Change your mind. You're allowed to change your mind. Nothing wrong with that. I know it's sometimes viewed as a weakness. It's really a sign of great strength. And the way you do that, again, the linkage is Alti Frosh Min Hatzibur. The community will tell you. Ask people. If you're aloof, you'll always believe in yourself. You're so great. But if you're with the tzibur, if you're involved with the tzibur, then you'll pick up hints or more than hints. People can tell you where you're making mistakes. Don't always believe in yourself. Okay, let's get in one more idea and then we'll do a quick review. I see it's already 10:26. Don't judge your friend until you reach his place. Again, obvious. We should never judge other people until we know all the facts, which is basically never. And again, continue on this theme of leadership. The Tiferet Yisrael explains that don't when you become a leader, don't be so quick to judge all the people. They're doing this wrong, they're doing that wrong, right? Right, as CEO, you come in, you clean house right away, this, you know, you want to make, no, don't do that. Don't, you know, don't be so quick to make like judgments. Again, we normally interpret referring to everybody, but based in the context of the Mishnah, the Tiferet Yisrael says it's referring to leaders, to great leaders. Leaders shouldn't judge the people. Maybe that's a sin of Moshe Rabbeinu, right? The unclear sin, you know, Shimon Hamorim, whatever it was, but he always defended the people. The greatness of Moshe is his defense of the people. The greatness of Avraham Avinu is defense of Sodom, right? Great people don't judge other people. That's for God. God is the only one who judges. We don't understand, you know, maybe you'd be like the people in Sodom too, if you lived in Sodom. I mean, it's not a nice thing to say, but it's, there's a lot of truth to it. Maybe an end. My father would always say that, he would take this Mishnah sort of, you know, homiletically in a literal sense. Do not judge your friend till you get to his place. So if you take it literally, you can never be in his place, because when you're in his place, he's somewhere else, right? I'm going to stand where you stand. That means you've got to go. Whenever I go to your place, no two people can occupy the same place at one time. In other words, it's the Mishnah's way of saying we should never judge other people. Okay, it's 10:28, so I'll stop here. Just let me give a 1 minute review or so of what we learned today. We discussed Yapet Talmud Torah im Derech Eretz, the different definitions of Derech Eretz. Is it creative work, making a business, Musar, our character development? What is the word im? What's the connection between Derech Eretz and Torah? Is it two separate, parallel, important tracks, or does it migrate into one? It becomes what they call NYU synthesis, right, in theory, right? And then we talked about working at the importance, what happens if a person doesn't have a living, it's not just he'll sin because he has to steal or whatever, degrading, you can be out of touch with people, and even your Torah won't be good. Obviously, if you have to worry about your next meal, your Torah won't be good. The person working for the community, it's extra important, community people work l'shem shemayim because they have to hurt people. We should always realize that what we do, our great credit, yes, we're entitled to some credit, it's our hard work, but there are other people, it's where we come from, other people helping us, and everything is dependent on so much is dependent, most of what we do is beyond our control, all we can do is the effort, and God will give you the reward as if you did it. Avram only batted one on the bait, it's okay, you do the best you can, you leave the rest to God, you get the reward. Be very careful, right? The leader, be careful who you deal with, how you deal with. Be part of the community in so many ways on a religious level, following the customs, getting involved in the community, feeling the pain, praying for the people, understanding what people are. And of course, if we understand people, we won't judge them, and we'll all be better people for this if we follow these. The Mishnah, that's why I love teaching Pirkei Avot. It's so beautiful, and I think, and it's so many deep meanings. The Torah really is poetry. There is the delve deeper and deeper, and every time you review, you learn something new. So, okay, we'll end here. Thank, please God, we'll see you all next week for a mini shiurim, and I want to wish everybody a Shabbat.